Welcome again, kiddos, to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Keller Wells. We're going to talk about the new NXT episode that was on tonight. Not a crazy episode in the grand scheme of things. Decent episode with at least one very good match. And just a couple of emails from you. Not the large amount you all got last week when I was very sick. But just two emails that we will cover as well. If you want to email us, ask us questions, that'll be pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. That is how to get a hold of us. If you want to hear us tackle any questions, because we'll pretty much take them all. So, I'm Kelly Wells. I do the NXT tracker at The Torch. I wrote one about Dakota Kai this morning and sent it off, but it has not gone up yet, or at least it hadn't last I looked, so you can find that later. Spoiler alert, I like Dakota Kai. So there's a little bit of that, a little bit of pro-Dakota Kai stuff in there. Anyway, let's say hey to the other two guys that I'm hanging out with here and talking about this show with. Justin James.
Hi, I'm Justin James. You can find me on Twitter at Justin_M_James.
And Tom Stout.
At Tom Stout on Twitter, doing the NXT tapings reports, and I'm here to hopefully redeem myself tonight after having some embarrassing factual slip-ups on last week's episode.
Ooh, and I'm at Spooky Milk on Twitter. Do you have to issue any corrections right now? Is that where we want to start?
Thankfully, I did correct myself almost immediately after making said errors, but it was still very embarrassing.
Okay, got it.
I shouldn't be allowed on this show anymore.
12. That's a setup for a perfect introduction.
All right. So, anyway, let's get to the show. Still a little while until our next takeover, so plenty of time for these guys to get some things in motion and maybe even play around with the ideas that they want to, that they maybe want to pay off. So lots of things still, a lot of stories still in their infancy. So our main event, Johnny Gargano versus Velveteen Dream. This is the kind of match you would expect to be saved for a takeover. Of course, though, at takeover, Gargano's got to be facing Ciampa, so that can't happen. But Gargano versus Dream, the first few minutes of this for me, the first even 5 or 6 minutes, I thought, okay, well, they're going at 40 or 50% because this is not a takeover match. But this really picked up and was a lot of fun. I don't love that crowd. I just don't like... Just booing the face kind of gets annoying to me. Booing them for having the audacity to get beat is just irritating. The hey, goodbye was silly to me. Otherwise, everything about this segment was very cool. You obviously had the obvious plant, the kid in the front holding up the sign so Johnny could do his interplay with him. But whatever. It was a match. It was good. It told a story. And what the heck's going to go on with Johnny Gargano? Tom, you were there. Tell us about it.
Yeah, shockingly, this was not one of the loudest fan contest matches, even though it did sound like it. I would agree the start was a little dull, but I came to realize that they were just doing a pretty darn good job of pacing things out, because they definitely had me by the end. And, you know, they continue to do, like, pretty much anytime Johnny's out there, you're going to get some interesting forwarding of his narrative. It's not just going to be like a... oh, here he is again. You like him. Check out what he does. You know, we got that moment where he wanted to do that really violent move to Velveteen and thought better of it. And it's still just it's Ciampa being in his head still that is causing him to fail. And I hope that this actually is him walking away for a little while and that maybe he won't be on the next takeover. That this is the break that we were saying his character probably needs right now before having a presumably triumphant return. I wanted to ask you guys, I thought it was odd that we saw a Ciampa promo beforehand where he said, now that Johnny's gone, and me knowing how the match was about to end, I was like, wait, were we supposed to know that yet? Or is this just Ciampa referencing the fact that he's now defeated Johnny? How did that come across to you guys? Did you think
it
that you
came
just had the ending of the match spoiled?
weird. I felt that something that I for a second I was afraid that I missed something. That last week I was very sick on Wednesday, but I watched it as it aired, and I just thought, maybe I missed something at the end of the show. Maybe I tuned out too quick because I was just so out of it. I really thought, because it really did seem like he was talking about Gargano being gone. So I didn't know what to make of that. Then when they started talking, reminding me of the match, I was like, oh, right. So I guess he just meant I beat him, so to hell with him. But
right.
I don't know. It seemed like one of those things, very much like Street Profits talking about TM61, that the timing of the shooting and what the character's supposed to know, maybe one hand wasn't talking to the other, and things got shuffled around, and they were like, oh, snap, he shouldn't have said that yet. It felt like a mistake in timing. So, yeah, anything else on the match, Tom, or that experience?
Yeah, no, honestly, I personally don't have too much more on it. It was competent, and I'm mostly just interested to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, for sure. Justin, on this main event.
Ooh, there was some hot action here. In fact, I'll have to say this. You guys know I like me a hot match. But I think that considering where this match was at in terms of storylines, it was actually a touch too hot. Like, it was hot to the point where I was just like, have these guys really got this much of a beef against each other? Like, did I miss something? Like, outside of that, you know, the match itself, great match. The Ciampa promo thing, I just assumed it meant now that Gargano's out of the title picture, you know, I've sent him packing. That was, I mean, what you guys are interpreting it as, I can see that totally. But for me, I was just like, yeah, Gargano's been sent to the back of the line, finally. He's moved on from feuding with Ciampa over that title. The thing with the ending of the match and Gargano getting kind of booed, Johnny Failure chants, the goodbye song, I actually thought that was appropriate, given that he's starting to, you know, that last week he came out, he promised us that, you know, he's going to try to make this right. Ciampa's been in his head, and he's becoming like Ciampa, and he doesn't want to be that person. And then this week, boom, we saw it. You know, he wants to do the Ciampa Orton DDT, and then he wants to do it on the outside. What actually disturbed me there is that the referee actually came to the outside to admonish him, which they don't do. I didn't like that. I like that, you know, he thought about dropping the knee pad, then changed his mind. But he let Dream goad him into doing that. And I think that the boos were appropriate. He allowed Dream to goad him into doing exactly what he promised us last week he wouldn't. The fans were cheering or booing the fact they broke his promise. I thought that was totally appropriate. I hate seeing a guy that I like as much as Johnny Gargano, you know, going through a storyline like this, because it's emotionally painful, but this is great TV, what's going on here.
Yeah, for sure. I actually loved the referee going out and doing that, but I loved it in that I wish that was stasis. I wish that was what was happening all the time, because that can create heat that they're not creating with the referees like they used to. For the referee to kind of actually look out for somebody's well-being really would be one of the jobs of a referee. Now, that would be a whole different new thing to learn. But, I mean, these are little things that referees can do to really make certain moves and certain actions garner a lot of heat. There's one of the guys, especially in New Japan, our referee, Marty Asami, he loses his mind when guys go to the top to do and then bring the other guy with him. He's just like, no, no. And he's just throwing his arms out and everything like that. And I think it adds a lot to the match. And I'm not saying do it as big as all that all the time, but to move a story forward and generate heat, I like a little bit of that stuff. But you have to be consistent about it. You have to be
exactly. Exactly, and that's the problem, is that Gargano wasn't doing anything illegal outside the ring. There was no reason, in the WWE interpretation of the rules of professional wrestling, right? There's no reason for the referee to step outside that ring. He wasn't doing anything illegal. He wasn't doing anything against the rules. He didn't have, you know, we're used to seeing it like if someone grabs a chair at the timekeeper's area, we're used to seeing the referee step outside and say, nope, now I've got to intervene.
Yep.
The thing, though, that's really kind of strange about this is that you see this all the time. Like when people go to the top, you see the referee admonishing them. And I know the history of it, right? That, you know, top rope moves were supposed to be against the rules and this and that. But it's not like there's ever – like this is ever enforced at this point. You know, there's no – like when people go to the top, why is the – you know, if you've just – if you're not read or knowledgeable, you're like, why is the referee yelling at this person?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
I know there's going to be some pick and choose – in wrestling, based on the story they have to tell. I accept part of that as part of this absolutely ridiculous thing we love. But if they – I know even though I liked what that was and I would love to see more of that, I understand why you thought it was weird to see. And I thought it was weird to see too when he went out there. I was like – I mean, we see guys get suplexed on the hardest part of the ring, which is no worse than what we're about to see here.
Is it really the hardest part of the ring? Has anyone actually measured this?
Wrestlers say that it really is the hardest part of the ring. Like on various tweets I've seen, not that any of it has a lot of give. Like I remember when I was young, you know, you'd get made fun of for loving wrestling sometimes. They're like, oh, it's basically a trampoline. And it's like, have you ever walked on a trampoline? Like, is that what it looks like they're doing? but you know, that's the people that I went to school with were just like, oh, it's basically a trampoline. They're just bouncing around. I was like, watch a single match and tell me that it's basically a trampoline. So whatever. It's a worked sport. People are going to hate it. But whatever. So that was our main event. It was, yeah, I really liked it, too. It really picked up steam as it went on, obviously, but I dig what you're saying about where this heat come from, because this match was wrestled with low bar, but the Dream EC3 match didn't feel as personal as this, I wouldn't say.
And they had vignettes and
right
promos, yeah, against each other. This was like,
yeah, of course, I don't object to having a hot main event, but there was – my bell sort of went off for that too when I saw a Twitter promo that they did where they said something like, oh, there's a huge score to be settled here. And it was just like, is there though? I mean, you know, Velveteen interrupted Johnny's promo and called him a nickname, but I mean, come on.
Yeah, right.
And Dream did throw the shirt at Gargano at the beginning of the match.
The shirt.
And we know that's like garlic to vampires. I mean, Gargano is really lucky that the bell had not rung. And this is once again Dream shooting himself in the foot. If Dream had simply waited till that bell rang, thrown the shirt, schoolboy 1-2-3, in and out, done.
Yep. Gargano's got a bad history with shirts. He does. So there you go.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
Let's move on to, let's go with the women. Kairi Sane, non-title match against Trish Adora. Really dig the music on Trish Adora. Don't know if she's any good. We didn't see a whole lot of her. I haven't seen her ever other than this, I don't think, unless I saw her in a different match. And I did miss about a minute and a half of this match as I was dealing with something, and that was most of the match. So anyway, I did write down a note that Kairi, when she was pinning her, sat directly on Trish Adora's face to the point where she moved so she wouldn't be directly in the crack of Kairi's scene. That is the one thing I noticed, that it was just like, why did she do that to her? Otherwise, yes, this was a match to set up, obviously, the next match, Kairi versus Shayna. So Shayna makes a mess of the Pirate's Gold, and then we have a little bit of a brawl inside the ring. There was a very, very obvious clip job in while they were in the ring, changed angles, and it was clear that some stuff was cut out, so I don't know if there were any soft bits here. I don't know if Tom's got any comment on that, but there was a very obvious clip job. So, Tom, since I'm wondering if you saw anything with the clip job, I'll start with you on this one, too.
Watching it back, nothing really stood out to me as egregious. However, I did think, wasn't their brawl a little bit longer? I felt like they actually fought a bit longer. So maybe they decided that they didn't want to show them having that much physical contact before the rematch. And cut some of it out. They also cut out some of Kairi's entrance, and you can go on her social media feed and she's shared fan videos of it. It's actually really cute. I mean, like everything else Kairi does, except for when she gets really angry. She's so cute. She's throwing those doubloons to fans, which I'm just waiting for somebody to call that cheesy, but I totally wanted to catch some doubloons. Right. As she's throwing them, she accidentally threw her belt too, and then she had to go retrieve the belt. So they cut that out. But yeah, she's shared that on, I think, her Instagram and Twitter feeds. Yeah, you know what? I noticed that Trish Adora's music was pretty cool, too. And I'm pretty sure that she was just, one of these enhancement people that like Chevy Nova or Amber Nova or, any of the other ones that they've been.
He's got racing on the mind. Or Pulp Fiction. Did you just get your Nova out of storage?
I think, isn't it? Didn't the commentary say that the reason she named herself that is because she loved her Chevy Nova?
That does seem familiar. It's definitely not her name, but that does seem familiar.
Yeah, they did say it. It was but, name then, and thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that she was just a one-off appearance, just as they've been doing with the enhancement matches, especially against Kairi, it seems. And nothing against a Kairi match. I love a Kairi match, but this was pretty much the same Kairi match we've been getting, where she just gets in all of her spots. And they're awesome spots, so I'm not complaining. But let's see. I felt like there was one other thing I wanted to say. Oh, I guess I just I think that our pal Harley is right about where this rematch is going to happen. I don't know for sure, but I have a feeling this is heading to Evolution, not TakeOver.
Yeah, it does seem like they'll get that out of the way. And that way, if they want to move Shayna up, they've still got the time. There's still a lot of hours of TV to fill before Survivor Series if they're going to do what they're going to do. Evolution would be the time to blow that off, and she can still look strongish in defeat and do whatever they're going to do. And I kind of felt that same way. So,
So Tom just spoiled for me that they're not having a title rematch the next couple weeks. Thank you, Tom.
Well, I mean, maybe they will. They've still got another taping to do.
You know, I hate to be that guy, but at this point, I just want these two to have their rematch and get Baszler out of here.
No, I totally agree. I think that she's done as much as she needs to do and can do down in NXT, and you've got to make hay while the sun shines. She won't wrestle forever, and she's good enough to be up there. So
I don't want to see any more Baszler beatdowns on my screen at this point, and I don't want to see any more of Baszler looking weak to Zayn like she did tonight on my screen.
You know, I've kind of changed my mind on that, and I can credit Greg Parks on Wrestling Night in America Because I've said several times on here, I think even most recently when we were talking about Shayna, I said, man, I hope she doesn't do the rematch thing. I hope she goes straight up so I don't have to see her lose again. But it's kind of in direct contrast to Asuka, or not contrast, but maybe it shows that they maybe learned from Asuka, because they really had an issue with their division after Asuka was just so dominant. And even during her run, even though I was one of the apologists who said that I felt she was good enough at selling Asuka, that is good enough at selling, that I believed the plight, and I was always sort of wondering, is this the one where she finally loses? There were a lot of people who said that no matter how good they were, they couldn't get into Asuka matches because they knew what the ending was going to be. With Shayna, you sort of got that first loss out of the way right out of the bat, and I was complaining about it at the time because I didn't want Shayna to lose, but Parks made a really good point that this sort of made, no matter how dominant Shayna gets, we know that she's not undefeated, so we know that people can beat her. And I think he was specifically talking about how Kyrie basically beat her the exact same way that Ember did.
I've actually talked about that on this show too, where if somebody does an undefeated streak, it's you do have the issue where people don't get into your matches as much because they feel like it's pretty obvious what's going to happen. But it's also like a hamstring for the bookers. The bookers don't know what to do with you because it's like, well, I can't have them beat any of the other people above them. And I know I've used this before, but I'm going to bring it up because I haven't said it in at least a few months. Exhibit A for me on that is King of the Ring 1993. Tatanka gets into the King of the Ring tournament. And so what's he going to do? He's either going to win or he's going to be some kind of double elimination. So he gets booked against Lex Luger, who obviously should probably go through him, but instead they have, I think, a time limit draw. It was a draw in one way or another, and it was just like you would never, ever, ever not have Luger win that match, other than the fact that you need to do this with Tatanka. So it just seems like that was one of the times where the booking of an undefeated person kind of screwed something up. And even the mixed match challenge, as soon as they said in the first one, they were like, well, Asuka's undefeated streak is on the line in this tournament. And I was like, oh, well, I guess they're winning this tournament. You knew they'd break the undefeated streak at some point, but they weren't going to break it in a stupid, worthless mixed tag match.
Silly. And then the apologist side of me comes out and I say, at least they made it funny when it looked like Miz was about to lose, Asuka was freaking out on the ring apron.
That whole thing was just silly and whatever it was anyway. So,
yeah.
And that's fine. If they want to present that the way they want, then whatever. It's harmless-ish? I don't know. I used to be more of a purist, and there was a time I really would have hated it. Now I just say, you know, if I don't pay a ton of attention to it, there's a million other hours of wrestling to watch, so I don't worry about it too much. So anyway, that was Sane, Trisha Dora, and Shayna. So I do have an email specifically about Miss Sane from JB from Detroit, one of our more recent regulars. Hello, team. My question today is centered around the next challenger for Kairi Sane's NXT Women's title. It is inevitable that the next challenger be Bianca Belair, considering she is undefeated. I'm assuming she beats Nikki Cross tonight, and the biggest female heel on the roster at the moment. I ask this because I'm a little concerned that this feud may begin a little bit early for Belair and Sane. Sane needs to hold the title for a respectable amount of time, but I feel it is important that Belair wins the feud so as not to diminish the dominant character they've been looking to establish with her. Again, love the show. JB from Detroit. Okay, first of all, I don't know what he's talking about with the Belair and Cross match. I assume that must be coming later in the taping. So I don't know what he's talking about there.
Maybe they did book it last week and they totally forgot about this week, maybe.
I couldn't possibly remember a show less than I remember last week's. It was like being drunk, except not fun. So
I tried to obliterate all those backstage segments from my mind, too. They were really bad.
Yeah. So
I liked last week's best. Now I'm drunk and not having fun. Right. backstage segments, but this week is a different story. Maybe we'll get to
that. Oh, this week was...
Maybe we'll have to. I did mention last week that after the Belair and Nikki Cross backstage segment, that yes, the match does take place. We sort of agreed that wouldn't be a spoiler to at least say that is something that is forthcoming. So hopefully it's not too much of a spoiler to also say that it's a match of a decent length. So maybe you wouldn't want to put it on the same episode as Dream Gargano. Maybe it ends up being the main event of the episode it is on.
Okay.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Okay, so as far as the rest of his email here, obviously... I don't know how long you can keep Bianca out of this picture. Now, I understand why they wouldn't want to rush it at this point, but at the same time, it's not overly realistic to have somebody be undefeated. We've seen that in wrestling, too, before, where somebody was undefeated for a long time. Let's say Tatanka. And Tatanka's undefeated for like a year and 8 months or something like that on TV. Something crazy. And he never got a title match. And you just
they
thought,
do this on NXT too.
Why, if he was undefeated? Yeah, and that's just one
how long
that I
did Asuka?
So
how long
long
did Asuka take to get a title match when she was under? It took her like a year to get a title match. She was undefeated for like a year.
I was thinking it was like it was, 5 months, 7 months, whatever
it was.
It was
something
it was
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when somebody proves themselves to be the best, they should get a title match. I get why they don't right away, but that's when you have a heel run scared. If you need to do that a little bit, obviously we can't do that here because the heel is going to be the challenger. So I don't know how long they can ignore that unless they get and the way around that is to get Belair into a personal feud, which they haven't really done with her. Like she's been in some feuds, but she hasn't been in anything that was overly personal. Just matches where she didn't like the other person, but like she.
She doesn't
nothing's
like
been
anybody.
Personal. Right, right. She doesn't like anybody, but yeah, they haven't had... She hasn't been in a feud with an issue, really, at this point. So get her into one of those, and then you can maybe hold off this match until Royal Rumble. And by the time Royal Rumble comes around, Kyrie's been champion for 5 months, and then it's not so short if she has to lose the title at that point. So, but at the same time... In 6 weeks, when we still haven't gotten to TakeOver, wherever Survivor Series is, I don't remember, then maybe JB won't be worried about it because it'll seem like, okay, I guess this has already been kind of a decent-sized... I think we're all going to compare the length of this one to Asuka's title reign, and that's a little unfair because nobody else is going to get that, so... So, yeah, that was our email about that. So let's go to the tag match because we finally had the Forgotten Sons on TV after a very, very... I don't know how long they've been working the Forgotten Sons on off of TV, but it's been a while because we've been talking about this nickname for them for quite a while. It was Blake and Cutler in the match against the Street Profits, booked almost exactly how I thought that they had to book this, because you don't finally put these guys on TV in a decent-sized match to have them lose, but the Profits wouldn't lose to these guys, so they did what they did. And anyway, I hate to keep starting with Tom, but I'm just curious about the Forgotten Sons thing. You've been to a lot of shows. How long have they been doing this, and how long have they been sitting on this? And is it always going to be Cutler and Blake together? Is that something they've worked out? Is Riker going to be singles? What's the story with this trio?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've only seen them work dark matches at tapings. I haven't seen them at live events. I actually haven't been to a live event in almost a year, although I just recently bought some tickets, so I'm gonna hit it just pretty much at the year mark. Side note, it's going to be my daughter's first ever live wrestling event, so that should be pretty cool. But yeah, in these dark matches at the tapings, they do that Blake Cutler tag team, and then Riker will work a singles match. And he's bigger than them and looks a little bit different than they do because they look a little bit samey. Another side note, unless it's an old picture, I think Cutler just recently shaved his beard, and maybe it was just one of those like good pictures of him, but I think it's a good look and it definitely helps differentiate him from Blake. But Riker doesn't seem, he's not like Babatunde coming to the ring. He doesn't look like, okay, that guy's the heavy. He's the muscle. He's making sure that nobody messes with his tag team that he's protecting. He looks like he's another equal with them. So I'm also interested in having that role a little bit more defined. You know, you're asking me about the Forgotten Sons, but it's a match with Montez Ford, and it's really hard not to just watch Montez Ford the entire time
in
a match.
I will gush about him when it is time. So.
Yep. During their entrance, you could spot me in the crowd, or I spotted me in the crowd, and I just have this goofy look on my face, like I'm a little boy who's so happy to see Montez Ford dancing down to the ring. And that one point where he flipped over the top rope to the outside, it's one of those spots that, yeah, it's spectacular, but we see it so often nowadays that I usually don't think much of it. When Ford did it, it looks like he has his own personal little anti-gravity bubble, and that if he wanted to, he could have just kept floating upwards and hit the ceiling. The guy's just unreal. And my only other thing on this is I'm wondering if I have the guys from the Mighty backwards, the one that I've been calling Thorne and the one that I've been calling Miller, because I could swear that the one that got unmasked.
Thorne is thicker.
Yeah, Thorne's the one with the beard. He was the one who got unmasked.
Okay, maybe he just looked weird after.
This has happened to me too in the past, where I've had to go back and like revise a report partially through a match with these guys, so I got them mixed up.
I don't have any issue with them, but I can't pick Steve Cutler out of a one-man lineup. Like I literally
struggle.
I'm trying to remember what Steve Cutler looks like, and I can't.
He looks just like Wesley Blake, except his beard. Yep. He looks just like Wesley Blake, except one of them has a slightly different color beard has a lighter beard with more gray in it.
Yeah.
And that's literally the only thing you can look at. Oh, and their pants say Cutler. And
well, glad I'm
that
not.
That part I know.
I'm glad I'm not crazy on.
But if they didn't have their pants on, yeah. Like,
that's why I wanted to point out that it appears as though Cutler is shaved.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, he has a nice Gaston chin going on, it looks like. So.
I'm so glad the Ely brothers never caught on.
Aw.
But the food trucks, they were big fans of the food. That's everything I know about the Ely brothers.
Food truck buddies with Tom, they had to bum $5 off and get a Euro once.
Oh, man. Well, the last food truck sighting was Dozy and Tuck, so there are no more food trucks. They just ate the whole things.
Were they working at the food truck?
The trucks.
That would be a great segment. Heavy machinery working the food trucks.
Would it? After today's heavy machinery segment, I don't think anything with them would be good.
We'll get to that.
I almost don't want to do it because I want to be nice. Oh man, the acting on both their parts. It's. Ooh. Okay.
Dozer stank up that bathroom apparently.
Yeah. Thank goodness for William Regal being there to play the straight man, because he at least tried to save it. But it was I think we can suffice
we will
to
get
agree
to it, Tom. Stop jumping ahead.
We're there. You know what? We're going to jump to Justin with this, the whole Forgotten Sons versus Street Profits, as well as the Mighty running in. And since we just continued on with the heavy machinery segment, all of that is it's all you now. Go for it.
All right. So. The only thing that stunk worse than this match was the awful bathroom humor, literally bathroom humor in that backstage segment. This match was the definition of a house show. This match was so bland, so boring, other than, of course, Montez Ford. All right. ignore anything I'm saying here. It applies only about the Forgotten Sons. And I can't tell if they're the Forgotten Sons or just Forgotten Sons. Forgotten Sons, these guys dress like generic heels. They sound like generic heels. They look like generic heels. They wrestle like generic heels. Like they've got, I think Moss and Sabatelli have a bigger move set because they know more than like three different variations of Neckbreaker.
Until the Mighty came out, I will confess that I was sitting in the crowd thinking, "Man, I can't believe the Street Profits are working a dark match."
Yeah, this match was so boring. It rang in like 6 minutes and 35 seconds, if I recall correctly, and it felt like it was 16 minutes. I felt like I was going to have to invoice somebody for my time.
If you hadn't said, that would have been an interesting thing for me to guess how long this was, because I probably would have overshot that as well. And during a 6.5 minute match, I shouldn't have a whole lot of trouble staying engaged. But there were times I was like, Kelly, you got to look up at the screen here.
yeah.
It was just right. And and once Ford was in the ring, and actually I will say that, that Dawkins had some pretty good segments here too. He doesn't get as many of those flashy segments, partially because he just doesn't have the skill set of Ford, but he just doesn't get booked to have he just doesn't do those huge segments as much. But I thought that he looked way better than he often. He's often a total afterthought, and in this one, I just kind of thought. I really dug what Dawkins did here, too, even though Ford is the clear potential star out of all seven guys that were involved in this whole schmaz. So, but yeah, as it was very much a house show match, and that's fine. I'm not worried about one or two matches on a show being house show matches and just kind of and being that quality. But I don't know. It made it clear why the Forgotten Sons have not gotten a lot of TV time.
Yeah, and these guys are a tag team version of Kona Reeves. In terms of the Mighty, the fact that we all continue to mix up Thorne and Miller, it's because these guys are so generic and interchangeable themselves. It's great that they have a slightly flashier and technically astute style, but nothing stands out about these guys. Like you see like Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong in a match, I can read a write-up if somebody wrote a write-up without any names and saying heel number one hits this move, heel number two hits this move, I'll be like, oh yeah, that's O'Reilly, that's Strong, even without even saying backbreaker. Right? Even without the backbreakers, they have a totally different yet equally able style. Miller and Thorne, no differentiation. They just hit this generic mix of strikes and top rope maneuvers. There's nothing going on with these guys. Moving, yeah, it's true. It's damn true.
Shut up and stop for a second. Thorne and Miller are... I don't have any issue differentiating them, and I actually don't have a whole lot of issue differentiating their work either. They're both decent-ish, but they're very much like, for me, they're both fine, but they both kind of come off as creator wrestlers, like on a video game. And Shane Thorne is your basic heavyweight creator wrestler. And Nick Miller is your basic cruiserweight creator wrestler. They both weigh less than me. They're both fine. Thorne?
Like before you customize them, right?
Maybe. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Before you customize them, that's kind of what they are. And I like these guys. I like the matches that they've had fine, but I would have thought I'd be so much more excited to see them by now. There just doesn't seem to be this huge step forward. And I know that injuries derailed that, but it just doesn't seem like there's been this huge step forward for them.
They've gotten a spark. They're Moss and Sabatelli, but skinnier.
So there's an injury. Why not have the other one on TV doing a singles thing creating that identity, or at least keeping that identity alive, whether it's a team identity or a singles identity. That way, when the other one comes back, you can... I understand why they didn't do it. They've only got so much TV time. But if you at least have that person around and do things like that, you can kind of... It's like they didn't bother tweaking because they knew he wasn't going to be back for 9 months anyway.
I don't know. Ciampa stayed off TV for, like, what, 10 months and became the hottest heel in wrestling in the process?
Yeah, well, he's a very special talent, like really special talent.
You know what?
He's got a perfect look. He's a great wrestler.
Honestly, Ciampa, before the turn, I mean, Ciampa never disappointed me, but I never was, like, blown away by Ciampa.
He always blew me away, and especially in, and I don't remember if you saw it, I want to say no, but the Cruiserweight Classic. If you had seen that match against Gargano, I know that you would have known at the time, like, okay, if they ever pull the trigger, this is going to work. I understand if you didn't see that match that you would not pick up on that, but if you had ever, you should go back and see that match. Because
I always thought Gargano was the star of DIY. To me, Gargano was the meat and potatoes of DIY.
I always thought that it could be Ciampa, but I've done that a lot in tag teams where I was like, why are they focusing on Jeff? I see so much more in Matt and all this and everything like that. But yeah, if you go back to that match, it won't surprise you that although they're both doing well, Ciampa's the one on top. And that's in the fourth episode. It's the last match on the fourth episode of the Cruiserweight Classic, and it is awesome, and it's brutal.
No, I heard good things about that match.
I love it so much, yeah. It's great.
And then the backstage thing, oh my God. It wasn't just that the acting was bad, but like who signed off on this script? Heavy Machinery sat there literally making bathroom humor jokes. It was gross. Nobody wants to watch that. Right. There's like 9-year-old boy humor. It was so stupid. It was awful.
And I know that's what this particular team is going after. They're going after the young, but the young deserve better too. Like, no, it doesn't sound right. Thank you.
No, because my 9-year-old son, he's 11. My 11-year-old son was watching, and he wasn't impressed. Mm-hmm. He didn't laugh at it. And he thinks poopy is funny.
Right.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. And if these guys were more natural actors, if that was the discipline they'd
gone into. When they talk about shakes and stakes and weights, I believe them.
Right. It's just, it's the performer you put it in the hands of. So you give, I don't know, you give De Niro these lines, he might make them work. But the old... The old Dozer is not going to make him work. It was too much. And I have come around a lot on these guys. As you guys know, I'm fine with what they provide for the roster. But this was a big ask to have them do this and do all this heavy lifting in this particular scene. And I feel like the goofiness in almost all of these segments is it's like they did Aleister Black being injured should be a really serious situation. And almost every scene they've done has been played for comedy. Almost every single one.
Yeah, it's like
so major disconnect.
Yeah, it's like I feel like I'm watching the movie. Yeah, I'm looking for Tim Curry and somebody offering up Jehovah's Witnesses literature.
Oh, absolutely. I am 100% with you. I knew what reference you were going to make before you made it, but yeah, good call.
Or the Benny Hill music. Like, right. When they figure out who it is, they're going to start chasing him through the hallways, and the Benny Hill music's gonna play, and it's gonna, and like the people are gonna be like that fast forward thing as they scamper through the hallways in their trunks.
Right.
And somebody's gonna end up like tripping over something and landing face first in a birthday cake. And Vicky Guerrero was gonna be there screaming, "Excuse me."
Oh, that does sound right. I have an email from Chris Fielder. Hey guys, I'll start off by saying tonight has been a rough one as I just had to get my loving family pet of 11 years, Bella, put down this morning, so it's kind of hard to pay much attention to the show tonight. What I did see, I really liked and wanted to get your opinion on two things. First off, I love the new attitude of Cash Sono. When he says he will be here for the shiny new toy, do you guys think that means Keith Lee or Matt Riddle? I'd love to see either one. Secondly, I really like what they did with the Forgotten Sons. They have the Sons get a much-needed first big win while not damaging Street Profits in the process. It was a good way to do both and also further the storyline with SP and the Mighty. What did you guys think? Oh, and also, I don't know how anyone could dislike Montez Ford. He's not only talented as hell in the ring, he's also freaking hilarious. I guess the only thing I can hold against him is that he got to Bianca first. He did also email us again and say, P.S. Sorry, just had to say this. I absolutely hated the crowd chants this episode. That is all. I hated the crowd chants, too, as well. I don't know. I just don't like people in general. Maybe that's my problem. As far as Cassius talking about his shiny new toy, or when the shiny new toy shows up, I don't think there was a personal agenda here. Now, I do think that he probably is about to feud with either Riddle or Lee, so that line is going to be perfect. But I think that the idea was, to me, it sounded like Cassius was just announcing that he was the gatekeeper. Like, that literally is what it sounded
like.
Oh my
God.
Me. So
words out of my mouth. It sounded like he just stood keeper out of the promo.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if he was talking about Lee or Riddle at all. I just and I think both of those will be good, but I think he was just saying what his, it was like a mission statement for what his role is, which is what his role already was. As far as the Forgotten Sons, I agree that I like what they did with them. I wish that I had seen more out of the Forgotten Sons in terms of varying their, I don't know. I just, when somebody's off TV for this long, I really, really hope that they come back with a big bang. And I guess we'll see where it goes from here. I don't know. Montez Ford, we all love him too. And I will say also Chris Fielder, as a great friend of the show, sorry to hear about your pet. That is a huge bummer. I had to do that a few years ago with a family dog that had cancer who was only 6 years old. Wasn't fair. Wasn't right. It sucked. And I know how much that hurts. So on all of Chris Fielder's comments, Tom.
A quick little peek behind the Tom curtain. I actually worked as a vet assistant for many years, and I've helped with many, many euthanasias. And for what it's worth, and maybe somebody else has told you the same thing, but from a lot of experience that, and I don't know this, the particular circumstance that your pet was in, but that is usually one of the most loving things you can do, because they can't talk to you, and so many people will be unwilling to take that step, and they will keep their pet in pain. So hopefully that provides a little bit of solace if you weren't already thinking it, that's a very, very loving thing that you could have done for your pet. And I'm sorry that you had to make it, but thanks for sharing. We love your emails. So this email was a very agreeable email. As far as Cassius, I totally thought Riddle. I only really get animated in the crowd when I'm really, really into something. And I just stood up and started shouting, bro, because I was like, oh my God, Riddle's coming out, or I don't know. It really screamed Riddle to me, especially because they're already kind of presenting Keith Lee, but even more so just because I feel like Riddle's hard-hitting style and Cassius's hard-hitting style would make for a really, well, hard-hitting match. I think it would be a really good first showcase for Riddle. Yeah, and obviously they've been building Cassius up for something. He's got 3 wins in a row now.
Yeah, it's we've seen so much of this with Cassius. It's easy to be cynical and just say, okay, who's his next big job to? And then we won't see him for a month, and then he'll have a slightly tweaked, more angry attitude. I don't know. Eventually, they're going to have to turn him into El Matador Cassius Ohno, and we'll expect some big change. But within 3 months, he's going to be jobbing to everybody again. So we'll go ahead to that match with Ohno. Oh, I'm sorry, Justin. Was there anything more to add to Fielder's email?
No, I just want to also add my sympathies regarding Bella. I just went through this on Friday myself.
Jeez.
Yeah, as you guys know, and something I've just never really had to come up on the show before, but, you know, my wife and I, we separated, but she called me up on Friday morning saying that that there was something wrong with the dog, and I told her, go take it to the vet. And you know, she called the vet, and she said, you know, described the symptoms, and it turns out that the dog had a stroke. And when she got the dog to the doctor, and I wasn't able to go there because I was taking care of our youngest, you know, she said, you know, she confirmed, you know, it's been a stroke, and the doctor says that they can maybe get her a little bit better. And I told, and she said, she's asking my permission, because you know, she didn't want to make that decision herself. You know, this was the dog that she had brought into our marriage. And, you know, I had to make that decision for her because she couldn't bring herself to. But I told her, I said, you know, if that ever happened to me, I've met a lot of people who've had strokes. If that ever happened to me and I had the quality of life that that dog would be looking at, I would want to be put down too. I would want that for myself. So I understand exactly what that's like to go through. I mean, just it's always hard. So, Chris Fielder, my deepest sympathies for you. And I'm sorry to hear that you went through that. Cassius Ohno, we've been down this road before with him, and I don't know, maybe it's leading somewhere. They've given, you know, usually when they go down this road with him to build him up as a gatekeeper, they give him one win. They don't give him these kinds of wins, and they don't give him this particularly nasty attitude. Maybe this is going somewhere different. Maybe it's going to a North American Championship match or something like that. That would be nice. Maybe they are doing something. Maybe they do want him to look like a real threat to a Matt Riddle or a Keith Lee. Say, you know, I'd like to see him do something with Keith Lee and say, hey, look, you're going to laugh? Well, your laughing and posing is going to cost you a match and actually beat Keith Lee. And then Keith Lee can come back and cut the silliness and beat Cassius Ohno to continue his progress. I think that would be a reasonably good story to go with.
Yeah, and Ohno doesn't normally get wins over anybody who's been winning. He normally just beats enhancement talent, even if he's beating good quality enhancement talent wrestlers. And Kona did win a number of matches before his loss to EC3. So
I think Kona's already on the trash heap.
Maybe. I don't know. This is the time for him to take a loss because he already took a loss to EC3. So what's one more? We see a lot of times when somebody wins a big or loses a big match like that, a bigger match for them anyway, that's kind of the time for them to absorb another loss or two, because what's the difference before they start getting any kind of other push? So I have no idea what they're going to do there. But yeah, they put Cassius over somebody who has at least recently gotten a push. So it's always interesting. And I know we've talked a lot about Cassius on this show and what they're doing with him. I will double down every single week on my own personal belief that there is no plan to ever put Cassius on the main roster, that this is what he's there for. I've thought that for a long time. He's one of the only people I've done an NXT tracker on where I literally said that my prediction is no main roster. Maybe that'll happen, and maybe they'll say, hey, you've done so much for us. Thank you. We'll do 6 months up there before we turn you into a trainer, because what an awesome trainer he'd be. But yeah, I think something like that for him might be what's in the cards. But yes, that match with Matt Riddle, that match with Keith Lee, something like that is probably on the horizon. So anyway, from Ono and Reeves, I'm sorry, we kind of organically went into that match.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Prichard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Tom, anything more on Ono and Reeves?
Just a little bit more, I think. I absolutely agree about Ono, although I will say, and this is probably just me coming around, because other people have had this revelation even before he was in NXT, long before. But I was very resistant to him for whatever reason, and I think it was mostly just because of the stupid name and the stupid music. And I still think the name is stupid and the music is stupid, but he's been clicking for me a lot more, and maybe that's just me getting used to him and enjoying what he does in his matches. And maybe it is the little bit of a, if not a heel turn, the little bit of a harder attitude that he's been displaying lately. Reeves, though, I just love seeing how he seems that much more and more confident in his character every time he comes out. And haven't seen it for myself yet. Maybe he'll be booked on the live event that I'm going to next month. But when he came out, there was a little bit of a rumbling in the crowd because, you know, it's the local area. He's on the Florida circuit. People see him in these live events. There were people saying like, oh, man, he's been tearing it up. Oh, did you see his last match in, I don't know, NXT Sanford or whatever? If that's to be believed, he's been really killing it. And I guess, Kelly, you've noted a couple times that you've seen him work prior to NXT.
Yeah.
So he's really got other levels that he can go to, which seems to bolster my theory that the reason he got this seemingly random TV time out of nowhere is because maybe that's the next step of his learning process. Maybe he was a bit camera shy or gun shy in front of the camera, or however you want to phrase that. And I've seen that going away very rapidly every time he comes out at a taping. So I think if I'm right in my theory, it's been working.
These are the same fans that boot Johnny Gargano, right?
Fair.
Okay, I just want to confirm. These are the same fans that cheer Adam. That cheer heel Adam Cole, right?
yeah, guilty.
Okay.
He's been Kona worked a lot of good matches that I had watched before that he was ever signed. I don't know why that was somebody that I looked into old matches of his, but they were in a small-ish promotion in Hawaii. There probably aren't any you're not going to sell out large arenas in Hawaii because not enough people are there. But he was a main eventer there, and his matches were very, very good. His name was Noah Kakoa at the time. I don't know if that's his real name or not. I can't remember now. I'm sure I knew at one point. But yeah, I liked what he did, and it was very much indie young guy kind of paint by numbers, but it was all very competent and all very good. So when you're learning a new character and getting into a different kind of thing, there can be another learning curve there. So I'm not overly worried about him yet, even though he's been around for a while. But a lot of these guys have been around for a while. Buddy Murphy was around for a while, and he's consistently having some of the best matches that WWE puts on TV in a given week. So
I was always high on Murphy from the first match I saw. I was like, wow, I love this guy. And in fact, it wasn't until like the later era of the Murphy Bliss thing that I was just like, I don't love this guy anymore. I was very high on Murphy when he debuted. I'm not high on Kona Reeves.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you turn around often, so we'll see what happens there.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yep. We will. So the only other things we haven't covered from the show are the Ricochet Pete Dunne bit. That is going to be in 2 weeks. Title versus title is what they said. So obviously we're going to get some kind of disqualification or count out because they're not going to put those two titles together. So obviously, so that we've got in 2 weeks. But don't sleep on next week, because next week we've got Lars Sullivan versus Raul Mendoza. So you don't want to miss that. And we also had a little bit on the War Raiders. Still not great talkers, those two guys, but we did get a little thing on the War Raiders. We were reminded that they exist. So as far as 2 weeks from now, Ricochet versus Pete Dunne, I think we're all just absolutely losing our minds, ready for that particular match. I'm very excited to see that one. Lars versus Mendoza, not only... It's a weird one to announce because, first of all, it's an enhancement match. And second of all, they've already worked a match against each other, I think. Mendoza is so good. I'm ready for the next step of Mendoza. Unless he's absolute death on the mic, I don't understand why he's not doing a little bit more than he is now. So on Ricochet Dunne and the War Raiders, let's get the last bits of the show out of the way. Justin.
Ooh, I can't wait. Yeah, it's going to end in a double count out. I'm trying to figure out how booking Sullivan to face Mendoza is a punishment to Sullivan.
Yeah, I like how Regal was kind of like, try not to kill him too hard.
Yeah, like Regal expected to see Sullivan like rip his arm off and barbecue it in the grill and barbecue it in the middle of the ring. But as long as he keeps the grill in the ring and no blood gets past like the ramp, it's A-OK.
All right. Yeah, it was – but all of the segments for this Aleister Black thing have been weird. It's strange because I would have thought that NXT doing this kind of weird angle would be a really, really cool thing to watch. But it seems like when they stick
to so much
basic
–
they do so well when it comes to just being a wrestling show. I didn't know this was going to be this far out of their wheelhouse. It's really unfortunate.
Yeah, this is bad. This is bad TV. And the one thing I did like about that whole thing was the way Sullivan kind of returned to this not gentle, but well-spoken, quiet, as opposed to shouting constantly. I liked that. I thought that was well done.
Yeah, it was weird what they did with him. It's like, okay, I like what you're doing. Let's strip away all the interesting parts and make you like every wrestler ever. Let's do that. So I just don't... Yes, I hope that this is a return to form and not just a product of the scene, and that's why he was in that more subdued personality environment. I don't know. So early Lars Sullivan was very cool, and hopefully we can hit the reset button on that. Tom, on all these other little segments.
I'm hoping that they can bring the Black Mystery back around, because I've been very much in favor of it, and I think I've only said positive things about it so far. Tonight that definitely took a turn with the Heavy Machinery and Lars segment. I thought it was unintentionally hilarious that Lars appeared to be wearing the exact same t-shirt as he was wearing when he was walking away from the scene. And he's now the second person who has said, like, oh yeah, well, I mean, I was on my way to attack Aleister Black, but somebody got to it first. And it's just, I want to compare it to something like Gosford Park, but this made me want to compare it to something more like Clue. And Clue is great, but this is not supposed to be a ridiculous comedy. I hope they can bring it back to a point where I'm liking it and it doesn't rocket too far out of the stratosphere of believability. Even though it's probably already out there. Anything about anybody else? Not really. I guess it's a little bit my gimmick to be that guy that's like, well, I was there and I already saw it, but hopefully it's not too much of a spoiler. I did actually end up enjoying this Lars Mendoza match. It's nothing more than what you're already expecting it to be, but I liked it for what it was. We'll talk more about that next week. What's our main event going to be next week? Probably Cross Bel-Air.
Yep. Well, let me tell you about Gosford Park. It's weird you brought it up.
It's Gosford Park.
It's
were you an extra in it?
It's a murder mystery. I was not working yet at that point. That was a few years before I appeared as an extra for the first time. But yeah, Gosford Park. I don't know if there were any extras in Gosford Park.
Mostly
takes place in the it's a murder mystery where the murder doesn't happen until like an hour and 20 minutes into the movie.
Good old Robert Altman.
He takes his time. He does. Not a bad movie, but it was like, I thought I was going to watch a whodunit, and like an hour into it, I'm like, I think I'm watching a Who Died. Like, I literally don't even know who's going to be murdered.
You know what? This sounds vaguely familiar. Like, this was a movie that I wanted to see and then didn't see.
It's been on and off Netflix a lot, so you can probably catch it at some point.
All I know is that when I finally caved into peer pressure and was finally going to watch Deadpool, it wasn't on Netflix anymore.
You have the wrong peers. Well, I will say that I'm not, as much as I want to be, and I am with other filmmakers, pat myself on the shoulder, I'm not the Altman expert, but in my experience, you can pretty much pluck just about any film out of his filmography, and you're going to get something out of it.
No, I typically watch about one movie a year on average, and what I've discovered – no, I'm dead serious. Like a couple of years ago, the one movie I watched is Mad Max Fury Road in theater, and like one year the only movie I watched at all for the entire movie was like a late 70s blue film. It's just I don't watch TV, I don't watch movies. and the only reason why I watched it is because references were made to it in one of my favorite songs.
Well, this year you should watch The Long Goodbye.
That's a really old film, isn't it?
I'm drunk again.
Robert Altman, we got you. I got your back, man.
All right.
Well, let's take a shorter goodbye for our listeners. Thank you, as always, for emailing us, for listening to us, for loving us if you do. And if you don't, you know what? To hell with you. I don't know where that came from. We like you, all of you.
Now you're healing on our audience too. Thank you.
You know what? Healing is what I do, and I just feel like it had to happen. So very interested to see where these storylines go as we kind of just slowly start our march towards the next takeover. And we'll see you next week. We will have the same group. Harley won't be with us for a while because he is covering the Mae Young Classic. So if you see the Mae Young Classic go up as a podcast, listen to Harley and Friends on the podcast because that is what he is doing now. That is why he's not available on Wednesday nights, and going to be a nice podcast, I am sure, and exhaustive, and he's going to talk about everybody in the tournament, and I'm very excited to actually get off this show and watch the first four matches myself. So, cheers. I am Kelly Wells, Spooky Milk on Twitter. Justin?
Justin_M_James on Twitter.
Tom?
@TomStout.
All right. Cheers, everyone, and thank you.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!